Now, you remember this time last year, many of us were still assessing the damage to our properties and neighborhoods after Irma. It was hard to get gas for the car. It was hard to get food and supplies. It was just hard driving around. I mean, all that debris and the fallen trees, a lot of roads were shut down. You may have been one of those who evacuated, and if you did, you remember perhaps going to the West Coast only to drive north and then try to get back south because Irma, like Mother Nature typically does, was hard to predict its movements. You may also be one of those who refused or just can't evacuate. Well, there's a new poll of Floridians that shows 1 in 5 will never leave. They'll just stick it out. Is that safe? Is that the right thing to do? We're joined now by Craig Fugate, the former administrator for the Federal Emergency Management Agency. He's also the former director of the Florida Emergency Management Division. Mr. Fugate, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
You know, the predictions for the severity of Florence have shifted. I mean, from a 3 to 4 to 5, it's now down to between a 2 and 3. But just tell us, as a former emergency manager, on the local level, typically, what's the 2 or 3 days before a storm makes landfall like?
It's chaotic. You know, we focus on evacuations because usually, you know, as you talk about these storms coming in, our biggest threat is water. In fact, there's a study that says 88% of the deaths, direct deaths of hurricanes is water, which is storm surge and inland flooding. So it's really about getting people to evacuate out of the low-lying areas and storm surge areas, and then everybody else stocking up in supplies and getting ready for, you know, the power outages and everything else that happens. So it can get pretty hectic, but the focus is evacuation and life safety.
And when you were head of FEMA, what was it like in those, again, those days coming up? And imagine, like, if you were there now and you're looking at this map, you've got Florence now on the Carolinas, you've got Isaac, which may not hit us, but and then another one behind that. And the Atlantic is really big. This is the busy time. So, I mean, what was it like when you were head of FEMA? And if you saw that kind of action, I mean, what's going through your mind?
Well, one of the good things is FEMA is actually broken into 10 regions. So it's not just headquarters managing this. So, you know, right now, Region 6, which is in Denton, Texas, is coordinating with the states of Texas and Louisiana on this tropical system. The big concern there is rain. Our FEMA Region 4 is coordinating with the states of North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia. Region 3 is coordinating with the state of Virginia. And well before the storm ever got to the coast, FEMA had already deployed teams to go in and link up with the state emergency operations centers. They've already been moving supplies and stuff. And really, you're getting to the point where everything has been moved as close to or where they think it's going to be needed. And now they're having to adjust to the storm track. But it's one of these things that's almost like a hurry up and wait. Get in, get your teams ready to go. Most of the response right now is being coordinated by state and local governments. And that FEMA's, you know, coming in with resources to help fill the gaps as the state identifies those needs.
Yeah, as we said, Florence now coming up into the Carolinas and into the Eastern Seaboard, and you know, people along that those coasts were asked to evacuate. Do you think that most people heed the warnings and they really do evacuate?
Yeah, you know, we know that historically we get a majority of people to evacuate. The problem is, we also get a lot of people who don't choose to evacuate, and it's for a variety of reasons. And you know, my goal is trying to reduce the barrier to get people to evacuate, because this is about life or death situations. And because we have to evacuate so early, a lot of times after the storm's over, people weren't impacted as bad. They're going, why did I have to leave? And I would try to remind people there's not enough certainty in forecast to only evacuate people that are going to have the direct impacts. We end up evacuating large areas because of that uncertainty. And it's gotten smaller over time, but there are still areas that will be evacuated. And they go home and there's no damage, and then they complain about being evacuated. I said, you should be thankful there was no damage. One of the most chilling things I ever listened to were recorded 911 calls in Escambia County with Hurricane Ivan from people on the coast who chose not to evacuate. And it, you know, you're hearing these calls, and the 911 communication personnel are having to tell people, it's too late, we can't respond, we have your information, good luck, we'll try to get to you as the storm comes through. And to know that on those calls, some people made it, but some people didn't. And that's the decision people are making. And so, you know, part of this has been, as we've gone through all this, is reduce the issues, reduce the challenges. People say, I can't evacuate because I can't take my pets with me. And, you know, more and more, particularly in Florida, we have pet-friendly shelters, hotels and motels change their pet policies to get people out. I don't drive. Well, a lot of counties and cities now are using their mass transit and even school buses to provide transportation. You know, I can't afford to go. Well, again, that's why we open up the public shelters. There's no cost to go to a shelter.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that you just brought up right there, because we look at this poll, and it was surprising. It said that, you know, you talked to 1,000 Floridians, and really this idea of how prepared are they for a storm, but also if they were asked to evacuate, how many would? 1 in 5 said they won't. And, of course, one of the things is, as you said, well, cost, because the cost could be hundreds of dollars to go somewhere else for a few days. It could be even longer than that. You don't know. How do you reach that person when they say, I don't have the money, I can't just pick up and leave? And some people live in communities, maybe just even getting out, having the transportation to get out, they just don't have the ability.
Right. And again, you know, a lot of this cost is the cost of gas, the driving, and going to hotels and motels. One of the good things I think that Florida has worked on, we have to continue to work on it, is building shelter capacity in the communities and then working with the local officials of getting people transport to the shelters. And so I think it, you know, it's the perception that it's expensive. Well, yes, if I'm going to drive, you know, across the state and I'm going to stay in a hotel and motel, that's my choice. It's going to cost more money. If I don't have the resources, that's why we open up the public shelters. That's why local governments will give people options of either assembly points or pickup points to get transport there. But it means you can't wait till the storm's on top of you to figure out what you're going to do. That's why we tell people, you know, we go into hurricane season. Find out if you're in the evacuation zone, and if you are, what's your plan? And if you don't have the money, can't afford to go to a hotel, a motel, where's your closest public shelter? And how am I going to get there?
And you talk about money. Is there FEMA reimbursement for any of that, for any evacuation costs?
Well, not to individuals, but to the government. So the cost of opening up shelters, the cost of providing transportation, the cost of medical supplies, even the cost of providing pet food and shelters for evacuations are things FEMA will reimburse state and local government for. So that's, you know, from the standpoint of the community, FEMA does reimburse up to, you know, 75% of those eligible costs. And, you know, again, that's, you know, one of the things we worked on at FEMA was to make sure that our programs were funding the type of activities that were needed, including, you know, the things about pets and transportation, not just running the shelter.
You had a powerful story just a moment ago talking about people who just they've convinced themselves they can wait it out, that they'll be okay in their home. And we had this the other day when we did our special on the 1 year anniversary of Irma. I remember a story that I had heard about a guy who stayed in a house. It wasn't even the owner. It was the caretaker, stayed in a house, and this is in the Keys, and he thought he'd be fine. And he was on a third floor, and halfway through the storm, the water's lapping up almost on the third floor. And he did survive. But how do you convince those folks? How do you convince that person, no, you're not. You shouldn't stick this out. You shouldn't wait it out. It's that dangerous.
Yeah, again, I think, you know, part of this is how do we do a better job of telling people how bad it's going to be? And I think to a certain degree, just showing them a map and an area and a color and going, this area is going to get water, doesn't really convey what that means. You know, when we're talking about areas and storm surge, this isn't, you know, people try to compare it to high tide or some of that. I said, this isn't high tide. This is water rushing in faster than you can run. This is wave action on top of that. The speed and the velocity of the water coming in is unlike anything people have seen. So even if you're up in a structure, that structure itself may be destroyed just by wave action and not offer you any protection. And again, it's one of these things where once you have made that decision, you reach a point where there's no going back, you can't get out. And so now you got to hope you survive it. And, you know, we've seen countless stories. Mississippi during Katrina, people hadn't flooded, and Camille thought it was safe and lost their lives. You know, Florida, too many times people have stayed behind. And then here's the other part of it. They'll be in the middle of this. They're calling 911. They're trying to get rescue. And during the height of the storm, we can't go. But immediately afterwards, we put a lot of our first responders at risk having to go out and do searches and do rescues for people who chose not to leave. I mean, I think this is the there's a lot of reasons people get. But when they choose not to leave, they're putting themselves and their families at risk, but also the first responders who will go out and try to save them afterwards.
I'm talking with Craig Fugate, the former administrator for FEMA and director of the Florida Division of Emergency Management. And we're talking about a recent poll of Floridians' experience with Irma and, in particular, their experience with evacuations, but also how prepared are they? Mr. Fugate, something interesting, though, because you understand the unique aspect and challenge of Florida is its shape. And there are only two real roads to get out. And we saw this with the evacuation after Irma, is that one, Irma didn't do what we thought it would do, and it ended up going up the west coast of Florida, and it did engulf the entire state. But we heard stories of people driving west and then north and then back south and basically being chased by the storm. I mean, how do we deal with the challenge of Florida being just really a terrible place to try to evacuate?
Well, part of it is you know, we've built a lot along coastal areas in evacuation zones. But I think what Irma shows, too, is a lot of people were evacuating based upon what they saw as the principal threat was wind. And as scary as the wind is and as easy as that is sometimes to conceptualize, that's not what kills most people. It's the water. And when you're talking about evacuating from storm surge, you don't have to go hundreds of miles. For most areas, you're literally talking, you know, if I'm up and down on the East Coast, once I cross US-1 and I'm not on a bay or inlet, I'm probably already past the point where I'm going to see that type of damage. I'm not going to get away from the wind, and that's why a lot of local county emergency managers say, you know, you run from water, you hide from wind. Is make sure you got a safe place in your home. If you're not in the flood zone, know where you're going to go in your home, fortify that, and stay put.
So basically,
don't try to get out.
So basically, it's not necessarily leaving the state.
Yeah, it's getting to higher ground. And again, the principal area we're evacuating is for storm surge. So for most communities, it's to get inland and get off the most exposed barrier islands and coastal areas. And for a lot of places, that is not hundreds of miles. In fact, in a lot of places, it's under 10 miles. But you got to know where you're going and have a place to go. That's why counties open up their public shelters. To give people places to go. And there's a few areas of state where we don't have good shelter options. You know, Monroe County, the Keys, there's one. But that's why they also start evacuations so early. And that's why, you know, places like Florida International University is a primary shelter for people coming up out of the Keys.
Let me finish with this real briefly. Last year we had Harvey, then Irma, and then Maria. You know, we may be seeing, scientists are telling us, we may be seeing more intense storms, more storms in the future. You know, what do you see as FEMA's role and can it handle multiple disasters? That, and you add all the, you know, all the other issues that come up with droughts and fires everywhere else. But I mean, is FEMA ready to handle, you know, that kind of surge?
Well, my question is, why are we having to build FEMA to respond to increasingly more severe disasters? And I think we're so focused on response, we don't really start with what's the problem. Problem is we're still building and developing in ways that are not sustainable given the increased hazards. And particularly for tropical systems, I think one of the signals that we see a lot more research supporting is this idea we're seeing a lot more heavy rainfall events. You know, we're not always addressing this on the front end. So we think we can build a response system to respond to increasingly worse disasters. We're not doing anything about reducing the risk. And that comes back to how and where we build. I mean, fortunately in Florida, we have a very strong building code, but other states don't. And in some cases, Florida has not, you know, always taken the steps to minimize this. And so we keep growing disasters and making them worse. And then we expect to build a response system. And, you know, FEMA is part of the team, but they're not the whole team. When I was in the state of Florida, we got hit by 4 hurricanes in 1 year. And, you know, that was a primarily state-led response, initial response at the local level. We pulled a lot of resources, a lot of mutual aid. FEMA was there. But nobody expected FEMA, the state, step in and take over the role of the state. Governor Bush led that response. FEMA support it. And that's how the system is built. To think that you're going to have FEMA just take over and run big disasters is a misnomer. And two, you can't, I mean, that's the thing I was trying to get across to people is you cannot keep building a bigger FEMA if you're not going to address the reason why disasters are getting built, getting worse. It's because we're building in places we shouldn't be building the way we're building.
Craig Fugate, again, former administrator for FEMA and director of the Florida Division of Emergency Management. Mr. Fugate, I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you.